Tasty, flavorful coffee comes from thriving farms. However, long-held industry standards leave most farmers scraping by, severely limiting their ability to grow quality coffee. But together, we can change that. Our direct-from-farm sourcing eliminates the many layers usually found between the farmer and you. This results in prosperous farms with the capacity to grow exceptional coffee. And great coffee is what makes all our days brighter. We invite you to be a part of a coffee movement where everyone is lifted. Joe Bean, coffee that lifts everyone.
Live from Rochester, this is Plants of Beats.
As artists, we sometimes want to be an island. We want to be selfish, right? But I feel like a lot of those people that are like that right now in the space that I see, I don't think they have growth. And what I mean by growth is that I don't think that they're able to impact the people around them. Mm. You know, it's kind of like I said, an island, right? So yeah. In that sense, you know, who are you really amplifying, right? But yourself. And that gets tiring after a while. You know, that gets really stagnant. And then you start, you know, questioning yourself and your own ability. So I think it's important as artists that not only are we, you know, showcasing and putting our stuff out there, but helping the people around us, lift them up to be able to know that we have that connective tissue to keep things rolling, moving forward for years to come, you know, and hopefully we'll have more exhibitions, we'll have more galleries, right? We'll have more people that are young just starting up and be like, yo, I want to put that out there because I went to my older brother's exhibition and he had some dope shit out, you know? So it's kind of like that, you know, just trying to make sure that we have the pride, we put it aside. And we know that as artists, it's our job to not only put our stuff out there, right? We got to advocate for ourselves as artists. You know, we got to get paid too if we have shows or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think the best form of payment is knowing that at the end of the day, we were able to help somebody else get to the next level. And that's important.
Were you raised like that? Or is that a value you think you picked up along the way in life?
I think I definitely picked it up on the way. I grew up in a house where I had a twin sister and my younger brothers were twins.
Here in Rochester, you born and raised in Rock, right?
Born and raised Rochester. Okay. Never left there until 2 months ago.
We're going to talk about that. But born and raised with a twin sister.
Yeah, man. So I had an older sister. Okay. And then I had a, so my mom was pregnant 3 times. And she had 5 kids, right?
Which Whoa. Is wild. But she had two sets of twins?
2 sets of twins, right? So so it was always a connective thing all the time, right? So, for example, our birthdays were, you know, like I said, I was November 15th, and my younger brothers were 18th. So because of that, my mom always wanted to combine her birthdays and have, like, one big birthday party. Or the fact that it was close to Christmas. So, oh, do you want a big present for your birthday or a big present for Christmas? Like, yo, that's not even right. But, I mean, that's how it was, right? So we had these things where we were always, like, literally, like, connecting, right? And having things combined. So it's kind of like it wasn't until I got older and I earned some independence on my own, right? You know, my family still calls me Ricky. You know, I feel like Ricky's a little kid's name, but they still call me Ricky, right? And I go by Richard. I think Richard is, you know, I want to take on my dad's name, but I also want to feel like I moved on from Ricky where I'm not living with my parents anymore. And, you know, I want to feel like I moved on and I'm grown now.
Yeah.
And I feel like with that came the Richard, right? So as I went my Richard in my adult life, I think I kind of like in a way learned to gain my own independence. And I think in a way, because I was so connected with my family being so close, in a way for me to try and tap into that again, my artist side, you know, is what needed that. So I think that's where it comes, where I was like, okay, let me amplify other people around me, the people in my inner circle. That's why I always say support your inner circle. You know, everybody can eat, and that's how it is, right? So as artists, I feel like that's the portion that I learned growing up, that, you know, you're going to have that family or that connective people that you're around all the time. And it feels good when those people are winning. When they win, you win, right? It's kind of like a Ponzi scheme, you know, triangle. You know what I mean? It's a positive one, right? You help those people out and then they help others. And, you know, it's a win-win at the end of the day, man. But yeah, no, I think it wasn't until I got older I started realizing that I had to switch up things and gain my own independence. And then, like I said, just tapping back into that as I got older.
Tell me about your... relationship with your dad growing up, if you don't mind. I know he was big in your life. He worked at Kodak, right?
Yeah, man. He worked at Kodak for 35 years. My dad had a rough year around my middle school when I was in seventh grade, I think it was. He was part of the first round of the layoffs in Kodak. It was a, I remember it was national news. It was big that they were, you know, laying off a lot of people, whatever. And yeah, he was part of the first round of the big layoffs.
About what year you think that was?
Gotta say it was 96,
Okay.
97 maybe.
Okay.
So in that same year was when my mom and my dad separated and they moved
Wow.
away from it. But my dad, you know, had a real rough year because that, you know, that spring was when he separated from my mom, and I believe that summer was when they did the layoffs. So I mean, yeah, so he the transition from him moving out of the house was really difficult for him. But eventually he was able to, you know, cohabitat with my uncle, who he lives with now, or he lived with then. And yeah, and you know, we started connecting more now that he was out as I got older. You know, my brothers would visit him every other weekend. I would see him sometimes every other weekend too. But the relationship with my dad got really, really close and tight. I would have to say maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, we got really close. This was during the transition of my divorce and me, you know, needing a space to stay. And at the same time, he was going through some health concerns as well. He had just got a kidney transplant and he was having some setbacks when he got home from that transplant. So he needed some help at home. So it worked out. You know, I was like, you know what? I need a place to stay now. I moved out. Let me move in with you. And he said,
Yeah.
yeah. So I moved in with him. And, you know, during that time, you know, during his last years, you know, I can honestly 100% say that he became my best friend. You know, like he, I was very fortunate to have my dad as my best friend and also roommate. Because with the roommate comes things too, like that annoying piss each other off all the time. So I
Right.
had that too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like my dad, you know, he was a funny guy, you know, and I would like to say that I picked up a lot of the stuff that he has too, in terms of his personality.
Why you
But
think y'all got along so well?
I think because he kind of knew that I was in a transitional state and that he was as well. And I think during that time where he left my mother for his reasons, right? He didn't really have the support. I mean, he had his brother that he moved in with, but he didn't really support him the way that I think that a son could support him. And I think my dad kind of, in a way, you know, was able to take on that role to say, this is what I've been through and I can help you now. And I think that kind of like what my, you know, kind of like in a way, you know, my dad, you know, having his own little posse scheme as well, you know, just trying to pay it forward and uplift the person around him, which was me, his son. So with that, he was able to, you know, instill some knowledge, instill some, you know, support. Mentally was able to support me. You know, we did a lot of stuff together. We ate dinner together every day. You know, he took me to work. You know, I had my own car. But he still was like, hey, he would wake up early, take me to work. Then he would pick me up from work too.
Wow.
So I mean, we had a lot of time together, and you know, it was during that time where he started getting sick because of the transplant. So he, the long story short, he had a sepsis infection in his back. There was a time where he was taking me to work, and he kept on complaining about his back. And I'm like, yo, you know how dads and moms are. You tell them something's going on. They tell you something's going on. You tell them to get it checked, and they drag their feet about it. And that's basically what happened. You know, my dad, you know, dragged his feet with the back, and it turned out to be an infection that he had in his back, a sepsis. So, you know, he was in the hospital for about, you know, 6 months. So, and at the same time, my younger brother had an inflammation in his intestine. He had some, what do they call it, necrosis or whatnot. So he had some dead intestines in his, so my brother was visiting my dad in the hospital at Rochester General. And then he was complaining about his stomach and he went down to ER and then they sent him to Strong. So for about 4 months, my brother was at Strong Hospital, and my dad was in General Hospital. And jeez. I would get out of work because I worked at U of R. I would get out of work and I would swing over to the medical side to visit my brother Ryan. And then I would go after that and end the night at my dad's until they kicked me out at 8 o'clock. And then do that again for a long time. You know, I had a stack of those freaking, passes from the parking. Mm. You know, yeah, I had the month pass, but sometimes you'd forget, just do it every day. But yeah, man, it was really bad. It was for a while. It was bad. You know, my dad got, they let me take him home and I was doing home IV treatments with him. So that was our dinner time every day. And then, you know, he went back into the hospital. Yeah, I don't want to bore you guys with details, but
you're not boring.
Yeah, he had another infection in his knees, another sepsis infection. And then that one just kind of like spread to his body. It attacked his heart. He ended up getting a pacemaker. This is all why he was at Unity then at this time. The infection was bad. So they had his heart stopped. They got him back real quick. And because he was having trouble breathing as well, but they turned out he had a heart issue. So they gave him a pacemaker and they were giving him medicine to get better with the infection. And he was on the up and up, man. He was doing better. And they called me at work and they were like, listen, the infection is going down. We're going to put the pacemaker inside now tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And I said, all right, that's awesome. That's great. And then we'll talk to you about recovery for the pacemaker. And I said, all right, cool. And literally I was having fuego the next morning when my brothers and then the hospital called me and said that his heart stopped. And they, you know, they were trying to revive him for about 10 to 11 minutes. So he was out for his heart stopped for like 10 minutes and they got him back, but they didn't get him back. You know what I mean? Like he was just brain dead at that point. So it was like maybe like a week or two later after some tests to check his brain that, you know, they said that the heart stopping kind of did that, you know, him losing air to the brain. So, yeah, so we had to make that decision. Well, I did because I was his proxy and it was hard ever since, man. I still struggle with it. It was December 2023. You know, I still struggle with it. I had a talk with you just before we got on that, you know, in the beginning, I used to be really pissed off at the grief, pissed off at the random times I would break down, be pissed off at the times where I would see something get reminded of him. And I'd be angry and, you know, start bawling, boohoo, crying, whatever. And, it was something I saw today that basically reminded me that, you know, we need those grief moments. We need those times where it stops you in your tracks from what you're doing. Those heavy pits in your stomach. You need those because they're constant reminders that person impacted your life and that you cared about that person that much and that you loved them that much and you don't want them to go away. And I agree with it now. You know, I really feel like I want that. I look forward to those times where I'm reminded of him and it has me at a red light crying or has me somewhere in my room and I'm just like, damn, I wish I could talk to my dad right now. You know, so I mean, I look forward to those times now because I think, I looked at it in the beginning as reminders of hatred of why my dad's not here anymore. But, you know, it's the love he had. It's the good times he spent every day. It's a reminder that he's not in pain anymore because there was times where he'd be at home at night and just it would just be bad, man. And that's one of the reasons why I also left Rochester because a lot of the things that reminded me of him really just kept me not functioning well.
Yeah, because I remember where you were during that because we had some times where we were driving around. You know, I wanted to help distract, you know, we were driving around doing different stuff, visiting restaurants, doing that, but you were in a tough spot, right? You're in a tough spot in your head.
Yeah.
But I did want to mention, I mean, cause for me, like during difficult times, I love, it's not a distraction. It's the embracing of the little bits of somewhat normalcy of following your passions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That those mm-hmm. moments, like when I'm stressed and I'm burned, these conversations, these are the things that make me remember why I do everything else I do. Mm. That all those things, this is the reason why we do all those things, is to be involved in our passions, to be involved with the people that we love. Like during that time, I remember like you showing up to the Friday night. Like maybe we had a chat Wednesday or we went somewhere and you show up Friday and you did the bit. But it's not just doing the bit. It was being around the people that cared about you, being around people that loved this thing that you were involved with. How, you know, talk about what that meant, you know, during that time. Cause it was that little lifeline of normalcy and community during just this mire of, you know, difficult times.
Yeah. Because I remember, and I definitely want to hear your answer on this, Rich. You know, I knew some of that was going on, but not all of it in that detail. And I'm just thinking back to all the photos you were taking and all the curation you was doing around this time. And I'm like, how emotionally were you balancing those two things? Like
the same day that I signed, the same day I went to go pay for the funeral for my dad, that morning, that afternoon, I was setting up for our yearly celebration for Behind the Glass. That same day.
What was that?
And
that 24?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was more so, yeah, it was, yeah.
The end of 24, something like that?
Yeah. We waited on the service till January for him. He passed away late December, and we waited a little bit for people to come over here to Rochester. So, yeah, it kind of like overlapped with our anniversary for, I think, year two. And I think I remember my mom telling me, she was like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. And she mentioned, she was like, you should see if Quaje can help you out, you know, and whatnot. And I said, if I have Quaje do this by himself, he's going to be thinking about me and worried about what I'm going through. He's not going to be able to do it the way that we planned it together. Mm. So I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I feel like I need to be around people. I need to be able to keep busy. And I felt like this was something that my dad would have wanted me to keep going to do.
Don't forget to check the show notes. You'll find more information about today's guest, tips for caring for our feature plant, and a few special links connected to the episode.
otherwise known as the sensitive plant, right? So it's a plant that folds inward when somebody tries to touch it, right? That's why they call it the sensitive plant. So it's known for its unusual response to touch. When disturbed, its leaves fold inward almost like the plant is retreating into itself. It's a defense mechanism, a way of protecting its energy. The next thing I wrote after looking that up was, for artists, emotions can work the same way. Pain, grief, anxiety, joy, memory, all of it can cause us to turn inward. But sometimes an inward turn becomes the beginning of creation. Art gives those emotions somewhere to go. And that's everything that you're talking about right now with how it became like the savior for you during this tough time. And one question I had, what did your dad think of your photography, especially like with him working at Kodak? And I don't know what he did at Kodak or if it was even that connection made between what he did and what you eventually used as your sword, so to speak. But like, what did he think of your art?
He loved it. He loved it. He actually, so at Kodak, he worked in the black and white lab, they called it. And in that portion of the lab, they basically helped with the different types of chemicals and whatnot and just constructing them as well. Or not, I don't know if that's the right term, but I still remember when I was little and I would call him at work and anyone would answer, even him, he'll say black and white lab. So that's what he did for 30 years. And what's crazy is that he would bring home so much like amazing things that I look at now when I see it. But when I was younger, I didn't give two shits about it, man. Like he had like a really cool like Kodak bomber jacket. And I remember it vividly. It was black and it had the Kodak thing in the back. That was pretty dope. I don't know where that's at. He had like a bunch of like little like, you know, he had obviously cameras. He had like these weird binoculars that folded together. Like he had a bunch of weird and cool things that had to do with photography and Kodak in general. A lot of like swag and a lot of like different merch that over time as he moved out, you know, after, you know, I didn't see it anymore, obviously. But he only had a little bit of stuff back at his new place. And I was able to inherit a duffel bag, a Kodak duffel bag, which I have today, which is pretty cool. But yeah, no, he loved photography. He loved what I was doing. He was able to see my first ever show at Ugly Duck, which was pretty cool. But besides that, he wasn't able to, you know, witness any other receptions or anything else. But I know he was proud of what I was doing. He knew that when... You know, he knew my schedule, so he knew when it was first Friday, and he knew that I had to leave, and so I would make sure, you know, before I went out, or if it was install, because the install day was the day before, I would say, hey, you know, I would make his dinner, I would do his IV treatment, and I would just make sure he's all set so that when I'm, you know, out for the next few hours, he'd be all good. But yeah, he knew all that, man. I'd come back, and he'd ask me how it went. Was it a good turnout? He was very proud of what I did as a photographer, but I think he was more attuned and more proud of what I did as a curator, you know, being able to put other people out there. And I think he was able to express that to me very well before he passed.
Would you consider yourself a sensitive person?
Yes, I think so.
In the truest sense of it. I know sensitivity, sometimes people can just
has different layers.
Yeah, yes. People can just call you sensitive if you take things the wrong way. But
yeah, it can be accusatory, but yeah. I don't think it necessarily is.
Right. I guess I mean in the raw sense, almost like the plant, like you feel deeply, you wear your emotions kind of outward, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, I would kind of pivot then and say that I think I'm more like a pothos, you know, where they have like heart-shaped leaves and they kind of wear their hearts under, you know, as a person that wears their heart on their sleeve, I feel like I'm more of that type of houseplant. I feel like as a pothos with, you know, the different types of leaves that, you know, branch out, I think what we're doing is when we're curating and we're trying to find people in our inner circles, we're connecting them in certain ways. And you know, the connectivity has to have some heart behind it, right? So I feel like you have to care about the person. You got to care about their character when we're showcasing them. You got to care about what they're doing after they leave the gallery. So you're checking out what they're doing and ever, you know, in future exhibitions or, you know, future endeavors they have. So, I mean, it all connects with that heart and, you know, at its root, because, you know, take the photographer out the way, take the curator out the way, like as people, as human beings, you know, we have to care for each other. And so that's why I feel like pop-up is kind of like more of what I would, you know, kind of like pivot towards.
But that's you as a curator, though. Yeah. As an artist yourself, mm-hmm. you would still describe yourself in the same way, like your approach to how you go about what you shoot.
I feel like as an artist, it kind of like takes a seat back when you're curating more. So, like, for example, like Clint Eastwood, you know, in his later years, you know, in his late years right now still, as he directs more, I feel like as a director, he probably feels like he has more of a reach versus him just being an actor where he's like, you know, one drop versus being the ocean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, when you're an artist, you know, you have that sense of advocating for yourself. You have that sense of being able to make sure that you're telling the story you want to tell with your art. But I feel like with curation, the pivot that you have has to, in a way, make sure all the parts are moving in a direction where it flows so that you as the curator can make sure that the people that you're trying to curate are able to tell the story that they want to tell. And to know that you helped them guide that way, or you guided them to that way to find that, it's a beautiful thing for sure.
Do you enjoy being a curator more than an artist?
Oh, hell yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I feel like I've learned to love that a lot more, because of the many people that we get to see, that we get to admire. There's people that me and Kwajie, in the beginning, we would see him like, yo, damn, we're not utilizing these cameras to our fullest potential, you know, or like we'll see other people like, yo, like we took that same shot, but yo, this is way better.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy because we see, and it kind of like in a way helps us be better as artists, because then we're like trying to find new ways to perfect what we do individually. But we're also seeing it and being excited to the point where like, yo, like we want now other people to see what we see in this person, right? So we want to be able to make sure that they see what we saw. So I think that's the joy of being able to curate, being able to make sure that people are able to experience what this artist brings, and to let them know that they can also be the same way, or they can also be able to provide that same type of sense for other artists around them.
And beats, make sure you subscribe and leave us a rating. It helps more people find the show, but more than that, it helps us keep building this little community around music, plants, wellness, and good conversation. Every listen, every rating, every share helps keep the roots growing.
sameness, right? I think like the idea of likeness and sameness, and we all go through the same kind of stuff, is way more powerful than like the division that like we are getting fed right now. Just it feels like every instance on the internet and what you see on the news and stuff like that. But that feeling that you're describing, that I feel anytime I'm at Behind the Glass or one of the other galleries, you know, Flower City or Rocco, or, you know, going to see Joe's show at Lumiere last time. It's just, it's an excitement, you know, and it, like a warm hug, which is like how I always like to describe this show. A nice warm hug. But,
for sure.
So, just briefly, man, can you talk more about your decision to leave rock and kind of where you are right now and your journey? And thank you for being as vulnerable as you've been with us, because I know that wasn't easy to talk about. But
yeah, man. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I would love for someone, even if it's one person, to hear what I had to say, and if they're going through something similar, to be able to you know, take what I experience and, you know, make it their own to get through what they need to get through. So no, I mean, anytime I can share my dad and share what I had to go through and share the grief that I experience still to this day, and that I look forward to now, you know, by all means, right? Yeah. So I mean, to dovetail to that, you know, one of the reasons why I decided to move out of Rockster was because I felt like with me dealing with that grief, I was utilizing a lot of things to handle that, but not in a healthy way. So what I mean by that is that kind of like the, you know, bandaging on a broken leg, you know, a lot of times I was doing so much in the community. You know, I was part of different boards, I was part of different art exhibitions, I was curating for different shows, Behind the Glass, you know, full-time job, yeah. You know, part-time dad, you know, it was all these things that were engulfed into one. You know, I'm still living in the house that my dad passed away in. I mean, come on, there's all these things that were at the same time, you know, rolling up into the pit of my stomach, to the point where I was like, okay, I need a drastic change. I need to do something. I need to take a pause from a lot of the things that I have going on. And one of the main things was to be with family that wasn't in Rochester. And, you know, there was a pivot to possibly go to Florida, where my mom is at, and my older sister. But I felt like I wanted to connect more with my twin sister here in Rolla. And so that's when I decided to make that jump and, you know, move in with her and her family and my nieces and nephews, and, you know, try and focus on my mental health as I, you know, should have, you know, from the beginning. Not to say I should have left, but I feel like I shouldn't have done so much. And it's not to say that I regret the things I did in Rochester in terms of the art community and the photo space. I feel like I didn't utilize it in my own sense the way I should have. I got enjoyment out of it, but it was kind of like a drug, to the point where I felt like I was utilizing it too much to get over things that I should have been working on in my heart and in my soul. And so I felt like the move was necessary, and it's good because I get little dopamine hits from afar. I'm sorry if I'm triggering people, but I get that from afar by seeing it on Instagram and, you know, being able to visit every now and then still Rochester. I get that still. And I see the amazing stuff that's going on, the photo walks that are like every other day now, the multiple spaces that are now opening up, showcasing artists and art. That's amazing as well to see. I do want to see more people amplifying other artists that are in Rochester. I think it's great that we roll out the red carpet for people that come from out of town. That's great. It's awesome that they have a large following. That's great. But we got to support our inner circles here in the Rochester community. And if that comes to the point where we need to step in and maybe pay the fees for another artist that needs to, you know, that doesn't have the funds for prints or doesn't have the funds for, you know, entering an exhibition, which is wild that we're still charging artists to submit work into exhibitions that are open call. Just putting that out there as well. I know that some spaces need to have revenue and keep it going, but I'm putting that out there as well. It's really wild and shady. Let me look at the camera. It's really wild and shady that a lot of you guys are charging artists that are up and coming for entry fees. That's wild. We should need other artists to sponsor other artists to pay for these fees. And that's something that me and Kwajay had a talk with today and another artist that's locally about trying to find a way to now, you know, from afar, figure out ways to help other artists that that are underrepresented, legit, like that cannot find the means to be able to support themselves, to advocate for themselves, because they, the inner circle they have around them is too pent up on gear and following and yeah. followers and all that. Nobody cares about that. We want people that that have stories to tell from their artwork to be seen on these spaces. And these spaces should not be charging artists freaking wild amounts of money. $400 for a space that's not going to get enough traffic, that has wild and crazy hours, is wild to me. That is wild. That's out of pocket. Y'all should be ashamed of yourselves for charging that much for artists to have a space where they don't even be able to have the traffic they need for that, right? So, I mean, that's just something that I've been real quiet about. It's really wild to see that. I wish I could do more. I wish I was a millionaire and I could pay for everybody's fees. I wish everybody had their own gallery. Can't do that. But the only way we could do that is if people speak up and look out for other people in the inner circle and do that and keep it rolling. And I think it's really sad to see that sometimes. We need the red carpet treatment for our own artists that are in Rochester. We can't be doing this all the time. And let me stop.
I was letting you cook.
And what I'll say, as you know, somebody that when you guys recorded the first one, I reached out and said, come do it here. That you and I have always gotten along on that is that we want to build our small C communities yeah. into the things that matter to us, that matters to the city, that matters to the people around us, and that's the work. It's a sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice that is worth it
yeah.
to build something mm-hmm. from the ground up for real that benefits the people that need to be benefited.
Absolutely.
It matters.
Oh, and you use that as a reel for, use that as a clip, a snippet, your promo video. That clip, that part I just said right there.
Oh, it's not. Like, what you think? That's going straight to Instagram. I'm thinking the whole time. Shit, I'm like, yeah, that's going to be great.
Shit, yeah.
Y'all should be ashamed of $400 of spaces.
But I'm gonna end it with saying, going back to what you said about how you took on a little too much, and now you sounds like you prioritizing yourself, which I'm happy you made that decision.
For sure.
But you tried to be the Pothos plant, but you should have been mm-hmm. the sensitive plant. That's what you're doing right now. You're going inward a little bit. Just for some self-preservation, and I'm proud of you, brother.
Sensitivity just came out a little while ago.
Listen, I wasn't sure. going to say nothing. Thank you.
show notes for a playlist featuring lo-fi music from Alo-Fi. You can find more beats on all streaming platforms by searching Alo-Fi. Plants and Beats is produced by Rob Bell with music by Alo-Fi. Subscribe to stay updated and follow Rob Bell and Alo-Fi on social media. The information is in the show description. Peace and blessings. See you next week.